What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. My name is Junkyard James, and with me, like always, here on this fine Thursday evening is Cody Marinara, who told me right before we went live that he's dealing with an injured right tonsil, so he might be limited in action tonight. But other than that, my friend, how are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah, it's my body. I don't know how to explain it. I've always had, like, I shouldn't say always, but it seems like anytime I get sick, if it infects my tonsils, it just goes crazy. And I thought I was kind of getting over it, but here we are tonight and a couple weeks later, and my right tonsil hurts so bad right now. But we'll try to power through and get through it. A little bit of cooler weather this week. Fall is the season that we're in good old North Kakalaki. Cannot wait for fall. College football is here. NFL football is here. Thank God baseball season's almost over. It's starting to be in a really good time. Yeah, see, this is how bad it's going to go. It's that time of year. Anyways, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. It's, like you said, college football is actually starting tonight. If you care for any of some of the smaller schools, they started early. But this weekend, we get a bunch of college football. And then for the pro football fans, we jump into action next Thursday. But we'll still be here because we don't care about the Eagles or the Cowboys. So at least I don't. I'm doing pretty good. We got a jam-packed episode for you guys tonight. But as always, I have to stress, we're trying to get to 100 subscribers. And for a while, just a few weeks ago, we were doing pretty good at getting subscribers. We were getting one or two a week and pretty, you know, in multiple weeks back to back. But we've kind of slowed down here getting some subscribers. So if you can hit that subscribe button, turn on those notifications, share this video to any AEW, WWE, wrestling fans in general. Comment, like, join the chat on the live streams. That would be great. If you listen to these episodes via our audio-only formats, whether it be on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts, there's several other different ones that they get distributed out to. If you listen to them there, leave us a 5-star review, subscribe there on those platforms, and help share this podcast to all of the wrestling world. We have a lot of wrestling content to get to, but first, as I mentioned, we are starting college football season. We're starting this is a big moment in sports, especially down here in the South. And so you messaged me earlier saying, hey, let's maybe add a segment talking a little bit about football sports to start the show. And that's exactly what we did. Can we, I'm sorry, breaking news, Kyle Schwarber hit his third home run of the night. Anyways, the Braves are losing 18-4. let's talk about football because that's what matters right now. I guess the biggest news of the week so far in the sporting world is what happened earlier this afternoon when edge rusher Micah Parsons got traded from the Dallas Cowboys to the Green Bay Packers. I'm sure you're happy being a Washington Commanders fan that you don't have to see him two times a year anymore. Your thoughts on that.
Yeah, too. But so we start, September 7th? Mm-hmm. That's our first game Sunday at home against the Giants week one. And then this will be a tough podcast to get through. 4 days later, September 11th, we played Thursday Night Football in Lambeau Field against Green Bay. So, you know, we can't get away from them. But at least we can get it out of the way out of week two. And then we got to worry about them for the rest of the year. So that's a plus. But, I was a little shocked to see that. But that's how Jerry Jones rolls. And so be it. Let the Cowboys be Cowboys. And
I thought the Packers price that they paid them. So obviously, as part of the trade, they gave up two first-round picks and a defensive tackle. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. Kenny something. I can't remember his last name. But and then they paid Micah Parsons 4 years, like $188 million. It's like it comes out to like $47 million a year. I thought that price was very steep for Micah Parsons. I mean, he was good, and I was wanting my team, the Buffalo Bills, to get him. Not at that price. So I'm kind of happy we stayed away from that deal at that price. But, hey, I think that this makes the Packers ultimate, like one of the top two or three teams in the NFC now for getting to the Super Bowl. They got all the pieces. They got a stud defense now and a pretty decent offense. They're very happy with their first-round pick this year, Matthew Golden, the wide receiver. Jordan Love is there. So we'll see if the Packers can topple Philly this year or maybe not. I don't know. We'll end the sports segment. There's a couple big football games in the college world this weekend. So I want to get your pick on who's going to win. I got four games for you. The first one, Saturday, I think afternoon, Columbus, Ohio, Dave Portnoy's banned from entering the stadium. Ohio State versus Texas. This is the matchup of the week, I think.
Sorry. I'll be 100% honest with you, even though I love the fact that we're playing at night. This should have been the night game for sure. This should have been the 8:00, 8:30 kick on ABC, but it's not. Oh well. I don't know how I feel about Ohio State. They lost a lot of pieces. Obviously, won the national title last year, so naturally, you're going to lose a lot of talent. They have talent as well. But I'll be honest with you. I think Texas is in that period of time where they just seem to reload. They seem to just have good players that are second stringers. And then once the seniors graduate and then the rising class comes up, they just reload. And It kind of reminds me a little bit of Georgia and Bama a little bit. So I think Texas, it's one of those. It's tough because when you have the national champion, it's almost like I gotta roll with them until they prove me wrong. But I think Texas' defense is just so good, and I think Arch Manning and this offense is going to be good enough. And I'm actually going to go with Texas. I think they're going to pull out the upset in the Lucky Horseshoe in Ohio State.
So you know me for many years, and you know I love the SEC football. I'm not big on Texas this year. Everybody seems to hype them up. Like, Arch Manning is good. Arch Manning is – I can't – Texas is always overhyped. Every single – you know, Texas is – they're like the Dallas Cowboys of college football. They all – it's always their year. They're always back. I like the program that Ryan Day has built in Ohio State. They lost, but the people that they brought in are equally as talented as the people that they lost. I like the redshirt freshman quarterback for Ohio State. He's going to be challenged because Texas is very good defensively. But I like Ohio State. I think they got that edge. They got the home field advantage. And if this was being played in Austin, then it might be a Texas victory. But I think just because it's being played in Columbus, I like Ohio State. And you mentioned it, the second game on Saturday that we'll talk about, it's the battle of, I'm going to say, who gets to claim Death Valley? It's LSU. It's Clemson. I think it's in Clemson this year, correct?
Yep. It sure is.
It's in Clemson. They call themselves Death Valley. Baton Rouge, Louisiana calls themselves Death Valley. So let's challenge to see who's the real Death Valley. You're biased. You like Clemson. You're a Clemson fan. Can Clemson take down the SEC powerhouse in LSU?
I think they can. As a Clemson fan, obviously, you know, you want to show bias and say your team's going to go undefeated and win the national championship. They've got to prove it to me, to be honest with you. And I will, and I hate saying that. It's at home. It's going to be a raucous crowd, 82,000 strong. Night game. Night game at the Valley is magical. But this was 10 years ago. I would have picked Clemson by 10. This iteration of the Tigers, they got to prove it to me. The last three SEC opponents they faced, they're 0-3. Georgia last year, South Carolina, obviously, and then lost to Texas in the playoffs. So you got to prove it to me. Now, granted, two of those three were on the road in some fashion, but we still lost to South Carolina at home. So that doesn't give me much hope either. I want to pick my team. I have faith in my team. I do. But until they prove me wrong, I actually have to pick LSU to win. And I hate saying that. I do. I want us to win. But I just – they got to prove it to me. They got to prove it to me.
So I'll go this way. Brian Kelly – he's on the hot seat. I think that LSU had very high hopes to be playoff caliber the last couple of years. So he's going to come out swinging. I think, though, Clemson has a better roster. I think Cade Klubnik's the better quarterback than Garrett Nussmeier. But Cade Klubnik has to play a perfect game. And there are sometimes in some of these moments where Cade Klubnik turns into DJ Uiagalelei, and you don't know what the heck he's doing. And so if Cade Klubnik plays a perfect game or an almost perfect game, I think Clemson can win this game. But LSU is tough. They are battle-tested. It is the SEC. So as much as you want to give Clemson the home field advantage, they play in Alabama. They play in all of these big SEC games. I think they're battle test it to take on these hostile environments. It's going to be a nail biter. And I think it's all going to go down to which quarterback plays just a little bit better. But I think I'm going to pick, I'll pick Clemson to win this game.
I appreciate that. I'm sure that kind of hurts being a South Carolina fan. Listen, tell me if this is a smart bet. I put a $100 bet today.
Okay.
That the Tigers will win.
That's a great bet. I think that's almost 100 proof.
I should already break even, right?
Right. You should they may give you like a little bit of extra pocket change just for putting the bet in.
Fair enough.
Well, let's move to Sunday though. There's two games on Sunday as part of the Aflac kickoff series in Atlanta, Georgia. And then there's another one. I don't know if both games play in Atlanta, but they may both be played in Atlanta. I'm not sure. I know the first one is played in Atlanta Sunday afternoon, about 3:30. The South Carolina Gamecocks go to Atlanta, Georgia to take on the Virginia Tech Hokies. And I'm a South Carolina fan, so play the reverse. There's a lot of bias. We came off a very big offseason, obviously beating Clemson. The rough ending to that bowl game last year. I still hate Brett Bielema, by the way. Shane Beamer has been recruiting his ass off, getting some really talented players to come in. Lenore Sellers is getting a lot of hype as maybe a Heisman candidate. We haven't had one of those since, what, Jadeveon Clowney? And all of this to me leads to the fact that this is going to be a trap game for South Carolina. The history under Shane Beamer is that the Gamecocks start the season week one very, very slow. Last year, we almost lost to Old Dominion week one. We beat them by like 3 points. This is a better team than Old Dominion. Virginia Tech is no Clemson. They're not going to challenge in the ACC this year, but they are a better team than Old Dominion. There's a lot of hype around South Carolina. Now, I think South Carolina wins this game, but I think the line right now is South Carolina favored by like 8.5. I don't know if I'll take that. I don't know if we beat Virginia Tech by more than 8. Just because we always start week one kind of slow. Shane Beamer has already said several freshmen will play in this game. And kind of like you have to see what Clemson has to prove it to you. This team has to prove it. I'm a little terrified because this is the first regular season game under new offensive coordinator Mike Shula. So I don't know what the offense is really going to look like. Our defense, I think, is going to be great. But the offense is a little sketchy to me. I'll go Gamecocks winning just because I think they're the better team. But it ain't going to be by no 8.5. I think they win by maybe 3 or 4.
So I've watched a bunch of training camp type stuff for a bunch of conferences, but mostly the ACC. That's obviously the team, you know, that's the conference Clemson is in. There is some things coming to Blacksburg. But the Hokies, you know, in the corner. And I think this is a perfect opportunity for them to showcase if they've really turned the corner or not. And I think it's going to be pretty surprising when in the fourth quarter we get a touchdown pass of some sort for the Hokies to bring the game to a halt. And what I mean by that is they're going to cut the deficit down to about 25, but they're going to get obliterated on Saturday in South Carolina. I think South Carolina overall is just a much better team than Virginia Tech. Lenore Sellers is going to do his thing. I don't know much about your team. I feel like maybe you might be a little thin of wide receiver since, you know, Leggett's gone. But I could be wrong. I really don't know. I don't follow too much of the SEC, especially South Carolina. I should, but I don't. But you guys always seem to have a decent defense. Listen, I know. I feel like, yeah, it's always have a good defense. So I don't expect you guys to play into a trap game here. I fully expect you guys to not only cover that spread, but exceed it by quite a bit.
All right. And quickly here, the final game that I want to go over is the conclusion of the week, I think, Sunday night football. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish take on the Miami Hurricanes. And what will Miami do after losing Cam Ward, Xavier Restrepo, and countless other players? They lost a lot of talent, too. But Notre Dame, they lost their starting quarterback. They have a true freshman starting this year at quarterback. I think Notre Dame is one of those teams that there's a lot of pressure on them to get back to the national championship game since they lost it to Ohio State last year. Again, I think this is going to be one of the closer games of the week, but I think just talent-wise, Notre Dame has way more talent than Miami, and so I'll give Notre Dame the edge.
Yeah, this was one of those that – oh, missed the one.
I got you.
Can we, there we go. It's yet to be determined if Miami can continue to roll with recruiting class after recruiting class. So I don't know if they'll be able to handle the talent that Notre Dame has. And I think Notre Dame is pumping out pretty good talent year after year right now. And yeah, I'm going to go with Notre Dame on this one for sure.
All righty. Well, we'll start some of these shows here this fall. We'll bring in some NFL content and college football content just to start the show. Before we get into our wrestling thoughts, expand the audience a little bit. Bring it back to our original roots of the channel when we had our football podcast that we no longer do. But let's get into some wrestling stuff. Last weekend, well, let me back up. It's everybody's favorite part of the show. Now, you asked me this week, hey, are we doing a mid-card meltdown segment? Because I got a mid-card meltdown that I want to talk about. And Karma says, I'm going to injure your right tonsil so that you can't be as passionate as you want during this segment. But I'm going to open the floor to you, let you spit out what you got to say on the mid-card meltdown. And then I got one as well. So go ahead. Floor is yours, my friend.
This might either kill my tonsil or kill me. I'm not sure. And if we get kicked off of YouTube for this, I apologize. We'll just head over to Rumble. So I really wasn't going to make a big deal out of this, but it was made a big deal out of. So therefore, I feel I need to make a big deal out of it now. And that was after Forbidden Door, the AEW does these post-show press conferences, and the new tag team champions are up there, Bandido and Brody King, known as Brodido. They showed up, and a reporter asked Brody King the question about him wearing the Abolish ICE t-shirt on Dynamite. Now, in my head, I'm going, listen, I understand that that's a pretty big topic right now, but we just got done with a great wrestling show, amazing crowd, record-breaking crowd. Why do we feel the need we had to immediately jump onto that train? Like, I just don't get it. But Brody answered that he wore the shirt on Dynamite because speaking on injustice is important to me. What's his quote? And I think it's pretty coincidental that they have him teamed up with a Spanish wrestler. And obviously, ICE is the program is to, the goal is to deport mostly violent or criminal illegal aliens. One would speculate that majority of those are Spanish people, you know, people from Mexico. And I just find it how people, especially at the IWC and on X and social media, they loved it. They love the shirt. They love Brody's quote. They love what he stands for. And that's all fine and dandy. It's America. Think however you want to. Speak however you want to. It's your opinion. It's wrong, but it's your opinion. I find it so hysterical that the people that like Brody King, like CM Punk when he was in AEW and he wore a trans style shirt the last few weeks of his time there, I believe, if not the, maybe it was a little longer than that. But anyways, he wore a shirt that had the colors of the trans flag. But obviously, as you see, Punk goes over to WWE. He ain't saying nothing about it. Yeah, there is no trans-inspired merchandise. And that's because, you know, sellout Phil sold out for the dollar. Hey, but you got your WrestleMania main event, pal. Happy for you. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous that if the shoe was on the other foot and somebody wore... We don't even need to say they can wear a MAGA shirt, a 47 shirt, a Trump shirt of any kind. They can just wear a We the People shirt. And I don't talk about the Jack Swagger part. I talk about the 1776 style shirt. They could wear a Back the Blue. They could wear a Support the Military. And they will get called the most vile, disgusting names, bigot, racist, fascist, whatever the case, whatever you want to call them. And that's fine if you feel that way, that you don't support that side of the aisle. Truth be told, I don't support either one. I'm an independent that may lean a certain way, but I don't love everybody that's red. I don't hate everybody that's blue. I think there's some good people on the blue side. I think that there's some nasty, vile people on the red side. But you can have your opinion, but you automatically degrade somebody if they just remotely speak a little bit differently than what your favorite wrestler does, or a wrestler that you like that supports a movement. If somebody else talks about it, they all of a sudden... they get blasted on social media for no reason. And I think that's just absolutely ridiculous. Am I happy that AEW allows their wrestlers to voice their opinions and have the platform to do so? In a way, yes. I just kind of wish that in a way that they don't bring it so much attention on television because of the fact that now you're going to be under scrutiny from either side of the aisle. You can post that stuff on your social media. You can make vlogs about it. And that's totally fine. But I just feel that if you bring that stuff on TV, you're just opening up a can of worms. It's just not good because when I watch wrestling, I don't watch wrestling for my wrestler's political stance. I watch it to get lost in the entertainment. It's something to take away from the real world events, the craziness of life. Let me be entertained. Let me watch you wrestle. Let me watch you cut promos. Let me watch your character develop. Let me watch the program for 2 hours to just forget about the stress and craziness of everyday life. I don't want your political message to come across, and now I'm forced to have to at least listen to it if I don't want to turn it off. And I could just turn it off for Brody King's segment and come back. But I enjoy Brody King's work. But I just think it's hypocritical how one side of the aisle will uplift somebody as if they're God, and if somebody were... remotely has a different opinion, they trashed him like they're Hitler and Satan. And I'm not going to go into the political aspect of ICE. I'm not going to go into if I want them abolished or not. That's not my point. My point is the fact that you have your platform on social media. You have YouTube. You have the internet. Feel free to post your platform on that. But if I'm watching you on television, let me just get lost in the entertainment side of it. I don't need to have politics and entertainment really collide like that.
Mm-hmm.
All the craziness in the world. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you make some very valid points. I remember just when we went to WrestleMania in 2017, obviously it was a different day and age, different landscape of the world. People weren't super brazen enough to, you know, be outspoken about a lot of their political views, but like no one came searching for those at WrestleMania. I think that's the magic of pro wrestling, is we can get lost in a fake universe where the real world problems of the day, we can forget about them for a little bit of time. We're in a day and age, you know, we're in a universe here where those political issues don't necessarily exist in the storyline. I'm totally okay with Brody King advocating for whatever he wants to advocate for. I do agree with you, though, that it seems that the criticism, it leans hypersensitive to one side over the other. When it comes to political spectrum, I don't really give a rat's ass what you believe. Like, if we're talking wrestling, I'm talking wrestling. I don't care about your political views. I don't care where you stand on certain issues. So no, I'm with you. I think a lot of times people take external forces in the entertainment world and make it the big picture. Same thing with like music and all other forms of entertainment. Like, I don't listen to my favorite artists because they have the same political view as me. I listen to them because their music is good and I like their music. I know that 95% of the people I listen to probably have something they disagree with me on some way, shape, or form. But it's entertainment. I think we should focus on the entertainment and not necessarily the outside spectrum. If you want to, you know, go to a Abolish ICE protest on your free time, I'm all for it. That's your right. You have the right to do whatever you want. But I don't necessarily think that should intermingle with the on-screen talent, on-screen story, because again, Brody King and storyline isn't really Brody King outside of when the cameras are off, which I think leads to another topic, which is AEW doesn't necessarily have gimmicks. So I think AEW, it's more allowed to be who you are in the outside world and express yourself because you're not a different character. Who you are on the screen is who you are off the screen. And so that's a different topic for another day. I just think it's there's a very good possibility that if you promote it, you're going to piss somebody off. But if you don't promote it, you're going to piss somebody off. So it's a win or it's a lose-lose situation no matter what. I like my entertainment as politically free as possible. You can have whatever political views you want, but maybe not, you know, shove it down everybody's face. Good topic. I'm going to have my mid-card meltdown, and I'm not really going to melt down. I'm actually going to introduce a topic and then give a praise to wrestling promotion at the end here. So obviously with it being 2025, the social media is bigger than ever, especially in the wrestling world. You have people with platforms who gain a little bit of some form of fame, and a little, maybe they make a little bit of money. They get, you know, sponsorships and promotions, and it's a big thing. And a lot of these people do a lot of streaming content where they stream live events and give their live commentary to these events. Now, there's a reason that we on this channel don't do that, and it's because there is a really big chance that those videos get copyright strikes on them. And at this moment in time, we don't have the platform of some of these other people to where we can, you know, write up AEW's communications team and say, hey, why are you taking my videos down? You know, free for fair use, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have that leverage that some of these other content creators do have. So we don't do those kind of live stream content videos. One, simply because I don't like the reaction content. Like, to me, it's not enjoyable to watch somebody else watch wrestling. Like, I want to, if I wanted to watch wrestling, I want to watch it without your commentary. And so I think those videos, like, outside of a handful, they're honestly quite boring. And so I don't want to bore y'all with content. There's 8 million different people giving you their reactions to every second of pro wrestling that's on TV. And I don't, you know, that's a hard niche to fit in. So we try to fit outside of that niche. Well, this weekend, a streamer by the name of Con Man, which is one of the bigger social media accounts, he experienced the harsh reality of copyright, where a third party that I have not yet seen if it was just an unknown third party or if it was New Japan Pro Wrestling or whatever. But he framed it as originally that AEW took down his Facebook and Instagram with copyright strikes because he was live streaming Forbidden Door. Well, it turns out it wasn't AEW. It was a third party. I think it's New Japan Pro Wrestling. Because if you know New Japan Pro Wrestling, I don't know if it's because Japanese copyright laws are different or if they just don't want their content being used in that way. They are very strict, probably more strict than even WWE, on their content being used in other capacities outside of their official capacity. And so AEW is working to correct, getting his Facebook page restored and his Instagram restored and all of that. But it led me to just think, like, is this where the content game has gone, that people can't come up with original content that they have to get the bulk of their views by reviewing or live streaming live pro wrestling? I think there is a chance now. Like, that would be so easy to gain a following, to you know. And this is where I kind of agree with my guy, DJ Notorious Nerdy D, of the casual wrestling community, where he doesn't like these type of videos either. He doesn't do the recap style videos that much anymore either, because, like, one, it's so easy to gain a following that way. It's really easy just to fake your reaction to fit a certain narrative to get the attention of AEW or WWE. WWE partners with a lot of the higher accounts, and they show all of their stuff on Monday Night Raw or whatever, or recap videos. And they're working with WWE. So WWE, I don't know if they necessarily pay them, but they promote their content. And I think it's just really a cheap way to do content. Plus, a lot of these people don't understand what fair use is. Fair use doesn't mean that you can just pull a 20-minute clip of a video, put your face on top of it and do live commentary over the video and say it's fair use. No, fair use is meant to expand on the basis what the video means. It is to enhance the purpose of the video. It's not to take the video. And so you don't really have fair use if you're using 20-minute clips. A 30-second clip here or there, you know, you may be able to have some form of fair use. But, like, this isn't just a wrestling thing. A lot of music reactors, they face the same problems where they live stream, like, album drops, and then the next day their video, you know, is demonetized. And I think, though, in that scene, like, they're prepared for it and they understand it. They're not going to complain about it because they understand that they're copywriting other people's material, and fair use is very limited in scope. But at the end of the day, I wish people were more creative with the content that they create. Like, I got to give props to, like, people like WrestleTalk and WrestleLamia, who don't necessarily do live streams of the events. They may do, like, commentary or reaction videos after the fact. But a lot of their content on YouTube is kind of creative. Like, you know, they do, like, top 10 lists or things like that that are very, you know, it takes a little bit more than just setting up a camera and watching wrestling with me to put out a video. It takes a little bit of time and effort and creativity. And I hope in 2026, as we move out of 2025, that we can kind of get away from this streaming model of, like, live streams being the, like, an everyday thing where everybody has to live stream everything. Everything has to be recorded on live stream. And maybe get into more bigger content, creative content. Like, and we do these podcasts live on YouTube, and it takes me several days to come up with what we're going to talk about. Like, this is not something I put together last minute. Because I want the stuff that we talk about to be relevant to the wrestling world, to wrestling fans. And it could be really easy for us to go live on a Wednesday night and do a live stream of Dynamite and get a lot of followers. But I don't want to cheat my way into a large following. I want you to actually enjoy the content that we're putting out. But I do want to end this segment with a praise to AEW. Because I don't know if you caught this last night on Dynamite, but there was a split second where they were coming back from commercial break, probably in the middle of the 9 o'clock hour, and a tweet popped up on the left hand side of the screen. And I was like, are they showing fan tweets now? Like, when did AEW start doing this? And I thought I was bugging for a minute, like, because they only showed it for a few seconds. And I go and I look at it, and other people saw it too. It wasn't just me. I wasn't dreaming. I wasn't, you know, hallucinating. People saw the tweet. I looked up the guy's account. It's a real tweet. And so it seems like AEW was testing the waters of, there's somebody watching social media during the live streams or during the live broadcast, and maybe they're going to be super interactive with people on social media. And then early this morning, AEW put out a post on social media, a picture of John Moxley, and then covering John Moxley's torso was a screenshot of a woman's who I actually follow. And I saw her tweet last night. They clipped that tweet on top of John Moxley's torso, and basically saying, we can't, you know, her tweet said 10 out of 10 Dynamite, no lies, or I can't lie. And AEW posted no lies. And then they used that tweet, I guess, as a way of promoting watching it on HBO Max. And AEW, finally, you're using social media to attract people to watch your show. This is very good. I said a couple weeks ago, I think in one of my solo episodes, that WWE is making it really difficult for smaller streamers and streamers in general to really get access. The Triple H basically said, we don't care what the IWC says about our product. We're going to do whatever the fuck we want. We're going to write it out. They're not in the writer's room. So, you know, basically fuck the IWC, fuck the fans. And that's kind of Triple H's mantra. And it seems like AEW is saying, you know what? You can have that position. We'll have the position that we care about the fans' opinion of the show. And I think they were testing the waters this past week on trying to get more fan engagement, showing some, you know, social media stuff actually on the show. I thought that was a nice thing. And so kudos to AEW, and maybe one day one of my tweets can be on the show, and that would be very cool. But anyways, that was the mid-card meltdown. We are almost 45 minutes into the night. So let's just give a quick thought, a rundown. Forbidden Door, what were your biggest takeaways of the show on, was it Saturday afternoon?
Sunday afternoon.
Sunday afternoon. Yeah.
I thought the MJF Hangman Page match was really good. People didn't like the finish of it and thought it tainted the match. I thought it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that both women's matches were really, really good. Expect Bozilla or Persephone to be in WWE in a year if AEW doesn't sign them. Uh-huh. I thought that both the matches were really good. The cage for the main event was really weird looking. It's really low. Kind of glad I was, so nobody had to take, 16-foot high drops, even though they were still pretty high up. But the main event was crazy like we thought it was. But I thought the show delivered really well. I thought it was a great crowd. Show was pretty good top to bottom. A couple matches that were didn't love, but was it AEW's best pay-per-view ever? No. Was it their worst? Definitely not. Just almost a solid pay-per-view overall. That's pretty much my biggest takeaways from Forbidden Door.
Yeah, Forbidden Door is usually one of my favorite pay-per-views because we get a lot of these like dream matches. And obviously coming out of the G1 Climax, a lot of the top New Japan talent wasn't available for this show. That was just bad timing. Next year we should be good because Forbidden Door will be in June and it won't be anywhere near the G1 Climax. So we should be getting, we should be able to get people like ELP and Yuro Tanno and Shota Umino and some of the, bigger names in New Japan to do some of the show. Not that the people that we got were small names, but we just didn't get a whole lot of matches, including a lot of the top eight New Japan talent. I thought it was still a really good show. I think All In was a better show. I think Revolution was still a better show. But it's probably like my third or fourth favorite pay-per-view of the year for AEW so far. Probably fourth, because I do think Double or Nothing also was a really good show. And so there were, I was not a big fan of the ending of the three-way tag match. I'm okay with the result. The ending was a little iffy. I don't like Ricochet getting involved at this point in time. I get why they did it to take the Hurt Syndicate out of the picture so they can't take the pin. But I guess that was a big moment for the fans. Bro Dito wins the belt, the tag belts. I don't know how long this tag run's going to run. Hopefully not a super long time, and we can get another tag team like Gates of Agony or something in there pretty quickly to take those belts away from them. I thought the Nigel McGuinness, Zack Sabre Jr. match was British Strong Style to a perfection. Like, it was perfection. And a lot of people don't understand, and especially if they're used to like quick pacing, they would not love this match. This match was just British Strong Style. Very, they like to manipulate joints. They like to take their time and then the pace start. And I love the ending. Zack Sabre gets a kind of a fluky win, but it was a great way to get the win, get Sabre a W over Nigel without Nigel looking like he got squashed out there. I did love the four-way between Mercedes Moné. Everybody said it was her worst match of her AEW run, and I have to like I don't think Mercedes Moné has had a bad match. But I loved what Mercedes Moné did, which was she didn't make herself the center of attention in this match. She let Persephone do her thing. She let Bozilla do her thing. I think Bozilla's stock in the wrestling industry blew up massively because of this weekend. My understanding is she has no intention of signing anywhere yet. She wants to stay in Stardom, and I think that's the best thing for her as she grows. She's only like 21 or 22, so she has time to, before she signs with one of the bigger companies, to continue to build her craft. Mercedes gets the heel victory, and I enjoyed that match. The Toni Storm match was really good. People were complaining that Athena didn't win. I don't think she ever was ever in contention to win this match. I think this was, again, just another way to build till tomorrow's match with Mina Shirakawa and Athena, where I don't know if Athena wins. I think they want to get her to 1,000 days, but there's no real reason to get her to 1,000 days. I think there's a legit opportunity that we get a rematch, Athena, Toni Storm, probably at All Out. And Toni Storm may interfere on tomorrow night and help Mina Shirakawa win the ROH Women's Championship. But I guess we'll have to see how that works. I thought the show was great. Everybody hated that MJF finish. I thought it was clever. I thought it was really a really clever thing. Bryce took the ref bump, gets up, starts his count, and basically dies after the three count, but he didn't see the foot on the rope, but he passed out. And he doesn't, you got to think in storyline, he doesn't recollect that he made a three count. He gets up and Hangman's foot's on the rope. It's just a perfect story that progresses to enhance the feud with MJF and Mark Briscoe. Everyone's saying MJF is the worst wrestler on AEW's roster. They're absolutely insane. MJF is one of the better wrestlers on the roster right now. And then obviously the chaos at the main event was great. And yeah, so I thought Forbidden Door hit where it needed to hit. It wasn't a perfect show. Didn't have to be. And it was one of the, you know, it was still a really good show. It was AEW usually hits around a 9 or 10 on pay-per-views out of like 9 or 10 out of 10. I'd give this one like an 8 out of 10. But it leads to the next question, which is both Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay were written off of TV on Sunday night. Swerve had his meniscus surgery yesterday, I believe. It was successful. He's starting his rehab. Have no idea how long he's out for. Typically, meniscus injuries could take anywhere between 6 to 9 months of recovery time. So we'll see him soon. I don't know when Will Ospreay's supposed next surgery is going to take place. He has a couple herniated discs in his back, or as from what I understand, back and neck. His recovery time is listed somewhere between 12 to 15 months. But I thought Hangman did a great job with planting seeds for All In next year. If Hangman's still the champion, to give Will Ospreay the opportunity to fight him for the belt. The question I'm going to ask here is, who is the one who are the multiple? It doesn't have to just be one. Who takes the place? Who fills the gap that Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland leave and can kind of take that position while they rehab and, get healed up from all of their injuries?
It's going to take a collaborative effort for sure. I say one thing, it will not be Hook. I mean, he came out last night and I was like, oh, it's Hook. I can't get into the guy. Too nonchalant for me to get into him. I think Darby definitely is going to have to be one. I think Orange Cassidy needs to come back, and he could definitely be that person to pick up the ball. It's good to see Wardlow coming back, but he's a heel, not a face.
Right.
I think if Takeshita turns face, then maybe we can see him kind of pick up the ball too. But yeah, I think that it's going to have to be a multitude of guys to be able to pick up the ball. That Will and Swerve being on the shelf now, those are pretty highly touted talents, big names. for sure that's going to be missed. So it's going to be hard to kind of pick up the ball where they left off. But Darby for sure. Maybe Briscoe can kind of be that person too. Eddie Kingston if he comes back. Orange Cassidy for sure. Yeah, it's going to take quite a few guys to be able to pick up where they left off.
No, absolutely. So when I wrote this question, the one person that I had in mind was ultimately Darby Allin. I think he's going to be the guy that they're going to, you know, focus on being one of the top baby faces. Obviously, you have Hangman. I think Hangman and Kenny Omega can kind of lead the charge at the top of the card. But this is going to be a you know, middle of the card push. So you get Darby Allin. Orange Cassidy has been cleared for action, so I think he comes back at some time soon. They just got to find a creative direction, last I heard, for him to come back. So I think Orange Cassidy would be there. We have Hook. Some people love him. Some people don't. I thought it was funny he returned, and he has new entrance music, and I thought it's funny that they didn't renew the rights to Action Bronson's song form, mostly stemming from the fact that Action Bronson said some really fucking dumb shit about AEW several months ago. And that's kind of why I think they didn't renew the rights. But the song that they have for Hook is, it fits Hook's character, like the New York guy. But I don't, you're kind of right. Hook just doesn't, I like Hook and I want him to be good. It's just he hasn't given me anything to care about, right? So hopefully with this new rendition of Hook, we get that and something other than the fact that I guess he's Batman. I don't know. And I'm going to I was watching a video. I can't remember what channel I was watching it on today during my lunch break, and this one stuck out to me as kind of like, I don't know if Tony Khan will do it, but it makes a lot of sense. Take some of the time, even if it's 10 to 15 minutes a week that you were given to Ospreay and you were giving to Swerve, and give it to your women's division and let the women continue to build and kind of fill the gap. Willow Nightingale, Chris Statlander, Harley Cameron. Those are all women I think that can fill some time. I think the stories with Queen Aminata and Tekla, and the Triangle of Madness or whatever they're called. I think you put the women out there and you can give them a little bit of additional time. It'll work. I think they can play a piece. So this isn't just a man has to step up because a man is out. Like, let's let the women shine a little bit. I mean, I would love, and I don't know if it's going to happen, but Jamie Hayter's back, obviously, so she's going to fill in some pieces there. But we're in Pittsburgh in a couple weeks. Like, would it not be great if Britt Baker, like, this would be a perfect time for her to come back and step in. Obviously, there's some, you know, I don't think it's going to happen, but this would be the best time to get one of your big stars from the past of AEW and put her back in a prominent role somewhere on the card. I don't know if it's going to happen. I think Britt Baker's too focused on being on the beach right now in Orlando, Florida to really, I think she's waiting for her contract to expire so she can walk across the street and sign with Shawn Michaels. I guess we shall see. All right. We're going to end the show. We got four pieces of wrestling news, and we're going to rapid fire them. Not a whole lot of time spent on them, but we're going to rapid fire them. All right. Sunday afternoon, 3:00, Paris, France, Clash in Paris. Are you excited for the show? Where's the hype? I haven't heard anything about the show.
For a show that supposedly sold 30,000 tickets to it, I haven't had any buzz to it, any hype. this has got about the same hype as WCW Pro back in 1993. I forget that it's happening this weekend.
Right. Well, I won't be able to watch it because it's starting about the same time that AML wrestling show starts at the East Rowan High School Auditorium, and I will be there watching Matt Cardona fight instead of whatever the fuck they're going to be putting on in Paris. the only reason I remembered that this show was happening was because we were asked to give our predictions in the Discord, and
which I still need to do.
And We Too Deep was very pissed off that Stephanie Vaquer was taken off the card. So, shame. But, all right, let's move on to the next one. AEW faced protests on Wednesday from the local theater, whatever, union, because 2300 Arena is a non-union arena, and apparently AEW is supporting non-union wages or not livable wage. I don't know. I don't get the point of this. I hate workers' unions. I think they are absolutely dumb. I think this entire protest was dumb and stupid. My take on it is, why wasn't these people protesting at this time last year when NXT was in 2300 Arena? The facts of the case is AEW hires their own crew. They don't use temp theater workers. They have their own crew that are union workers out of the union in Florida. And they travel just like to every show, just like normal. There's never been an issue until they get to Philly, I guess. And I have a very big hunch, and I don't have proof, so I can't say it's definitive, that there was a call from Connecticut down to this local chapter asking them to give some bad press to AEW. This isn't even an AEW issue. Have you heard about this? Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I saw there was a pretty big deal on Tuesday or Wednesday. But from what most of the people that were commenting on that issue, it seemed like it was mostly a battle for between the union and the arena, not so much AEW. But I try to stay out of that stuff because it has nothing to do with me. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody from a certain place in Connecticut or New York or Vegas or wherever had made a phone call. One union member buddy knows another union member buddy, and there we go. But it is what it is. Show's going to keep going. And went off without a hitch last night. I'm sure Collision will be the same way on Saturday, and then the next 2 weeks of the residency will be just fine. It's just, unfortunately, one of those things that you have to deal with in the Northeast. Apparently, that's why WWE, in the middle of the 2010s, didn't go to MSG very much because they didn't want to deal with the unions. When you're in those Northeast states, apparently you got to deal with them quite a bit, and comes with the territory, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Jake Hager hopped on to the Chris Van Fleet podcast and called Tony Khan like a spoiled rich man with daddy's paycheck or something like that. Made a bunch of comments about Tony Khan, about some meetings that they were in. Basically, here's what I took away. Jake Hager was pissed off that he didn't get to be Groot, or the AEW equivalent of Groot. He didn't like that Tony Khan rejected his creative plans, and apparently Tony Khan rejects a lot of AEW's plans. So what I took out of it was, so you're telling me wrestlers in AEW don't have creative freedom? But I thought they did. I thought Mercedes Moné did. But Tony Khan has final say. Tony Khan has to approve your creative vision. It's almost like we were trying to say this for the last 6 years, that hey, these people don't have creative control. Tony Khan still has final say. But anyways, yeah, Jake Hager make himself look like an idiot. This is not the first time Hager has said anything dumb. At some point, Jake Hager, when his contract was not renewed, went on some podcast and said, or on social media or something, and said Tony Khan was a communist. But yet now Tony Khan doesn't like unions, which are a very big premise of communism, is that unions are important. So what is it? Is he communist or anti-communist or anti-workers' rights, or make it make sense? Your thoughts on Jake Hager?
Sour grapes and try to make himself relevant since he's not been relevant here recently. And I think we can safely say that Tony Khan is the Vince McMahon of AEW, and not in the most perverse way, but in the creative way of the buck stops with him. He has all final say in creative ideas, which is good to know that, hey, there is somebody that's like, hey, I'm the end all be all. I'm the lead writer, the guy. I made the decisions, and sorry, you didn't get to be Groot. You can be Groot now if you want to. You make yourself a name on the indie scene as Jake Groot or whatever, and go live your life.
Yeah, I mean, I put a comment on social media that said, without Chris Jericho or Zeb Coulter, formerly known as Dutch Mandel, Jake Hager / Jack Swagger would be irrelevant. He couldn't get himself over by himself in WWE. So they had to give him the We the People gimmick with Zeb Coulter. Couldn't get himself. Well, he didn't have a chance to get himself over in AEW because they attached him to Chris Jericho from day one and never gave him the opportunity. But even when he tried to do a promo in AEW, trash. Chris Jericho spoke because he can't deliver a promo. Probably should have stuck to MMA, where he was actually half decent in MMA. But apparently he's retired from pro wrestling, which is probably a good thing for him. Last topic of the night. Two matches last night were confirmed for AEW's All Out live in Toronto, September 20th. Obviously, they're going head-to-head, like legit head-to-head, with WrestlePalooza, WWE's show. The rumor is there's going to be basically a double main event that night for WWE. Cody Rhodes will fight Drew McIntyre, is the rumor, and John Cena will fight Brock Lesnar. So two matches are confirmed for All Out, the first being a tag team match between FTR and Cope and Christian. I think that's was obviously going to happen. And then the second match that was confirmed for All Out is suddenly drawing out of my recognition. Help me with it. I know they made another one official. Remind me.
I think was it Darby versus Moxley?
Yes. Darby and Moxley at All Out. Are these two matches... Obviously, Hangman's probably going to fight MJF again. That's probably my thought. Or he'll fight Mark Briscoe. Hangman may fight. I think they should have Kenny Omega versus Hangman. I don't want MJF and Hangman right now. Let MJF hold on to that and cash in a little bit later. Maybe World's End, like you were saying. But let Hangman just kind of fight the best of the best. I think Hangman versus Kenny Omega would be a big, big moment. What other matches, what early thoughts of the All Out, you know, obviously two matches are confirmed. What other matches do you think we can see on this pay-per-view, as obviously WWE is going to load up their card?
My BMJF versus Mark Briscoe. I could honestly see Heyman not defend the world title and it'd be him and Omega versus Okada and Takeshita for the Don Callis family. Yeah, that's all I can see for now. And Meltzer brought up a good point that this AEW may regret going head to head against WWE for the fact that maybe they could have been the afternoon show and get the head start and say, hey, we were the first show, you know, the first thing people saw. But that would mean the last thing people saw, and that could be a good or bad thing. And hey, you know, All Out had been scheduled for this time frame previously before. WWE had to come in and do their bullshit. So just go with it. And if it fails, it's whatever. They're going to have over 10,000 tickets sold. It's going to be a success from that standpoint. Going to have over 100,000 pay-per-view buys. I think it'll be fine.
So I kind of disagreed with Meltzer on that point because I watched that video with him and Alvarez today. Meltzer seems to think they're going to get below 100K in pay-per-view buys. I don't think that's in the realm of they're going to do what they normally do. Like, I don't see how this card that WWE is going to have is going to be a great card, but it's going to be on ESPN on demand. You can watch it the next day. If you're an AEW fan, I think you're not going to buy a pay-per-view, you know, Monday morning. You're going to buy the pay-per-view that night, watch the pay-per-view that night, and then watch the show you can watch on demand the next day. And so my thought is they still get 130,000 pay-per-view buys. They won't get as many as like an All In, but they're still going to get a good number of, because it, like, Edge and Christian will bring a lot of people, I think, to buy the pay-per-view just for their big return to Toronto. I think that's going to be their marquee match. So much to the chagrin of the people in the Discord, I do disagree with Dave Meltzer sometimes, and I disagree with him in this moment. I don't think this is that big of a deal, because, like, I think we're at the point now to where if you're watching both, you'll watch both. You'll buy AEW and then watch WWE either after that show at the same time or the next day. If you're a WWE fan, you weren't ever considering buying the AEW pay-per-view. And if you're an AEW-only fan, you were never considering watching Brock Lesnar fight anyway. So I think they'll be fine with the numbers on the card.
If I were Tony Khan, I think they usually charge what, $49.99 for these pay-per-views, $39.99.
Mm-hmm.
I would do it for either $20 or $25, cut it. So that way it entices people more to watch pay-per-view. And yeah, you may take a hit a little bit on the revenue from that, but I think that'd be a smarter idea to get possibly even more and have a really good card, really good show, and people may be more enticed to watch it.
It's funny you brought that up. Andrew Zarian posted on social media earlier this evening that he's hearing that there are rumors. Hold on, let me pull it up. That AEW is going to make a statement here shortly about AEW pay-per-views showing up on HBO Max in the next couple weeks. So I think they've realized this pay-per-view model is running out of steam. No, you know, if you can put the pay-per-view on HBO Max or Prime as part of your Prime subscription, which is kind of the way I think they're going to do it in the future, is your shows will be on Prime, partnered with HBO Max, and all you need to do is get a Prime Video subscription, and then you can have the pay-per-views. I think that'll be a big thing, and if they start it at All Out and say, look, they're going to ESPN On Demand on a streaming platform, we'll give it to you for HBO Max. HBO Max is $9.99. Their ESPN platform is $30. Which one do you want? So I think it would be a good idea. I don't know if it'll be All Out that they do it, or if it's something later down the line. But we're supposedly getting an announcement regarding the AEW pay-per-views going to HBO Max here shortly. But I'll turn it over this way for you. That's all I got to talk about. Any last words from you as we leave the show tonight?
That's pretty much it. My my throat hurts. Surprised I was able to get through this far. But we made it, and I'll sign us off if you have nothing else.
That's it. Give us those final words, my friend.
Go with both four teams this weekend as we start college football, and then we'll wait till next week to do our NFL teams. Since my voice hurts and my throat hurts, all I got to say is have a great weekend. I will be hopefully trying that pizza place that I'm so hyped up for tomorrow down in Conway, South Carolina, home of the Shawna Clears of Coastal Carolina. If so, I may have to do some sort of review. We'll see how that works. If I even have tonsils, if I'm even alive, we'll find out.
Gotta get some tomato soup in your, and cool your tonsil off.
I gotta do something. I swear, I gotta do like constant hot or hot, constant cold. I gotta do something. But anyways, for this weekend especially with the big weekend in football and I guess wrestling if you're gonna watch Clash in Paris. But whatever. stay saucy, friends, and we will see you next week.
Absolutely. Don't forget ROH pay-per-view tomorrow night. But
right.
Tune in if you want to. But anyways, y'all have a good weekend. We'll see you next week. Beyond the